Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hey, this is Melissa Carper. I'm currently near Bastrop, Texas on a farm, and what I'm trying to do with my music, I don't know. I'm just trying to make some beautiful albums, get my music out there in the world a little further. Well, my nickname is Daddy, so...
Yeah, how did you get that nickname?
From friends, it's hard to remember just how it came about, but we were living in New Orleans. Gina tells a story that I couldn't find a job, and her and my girlfriend came home to the house one day, and I had been drinking a box of wine, and I was drunk, and I said, "Daddy can't find a job."
Yeah. Well, that sure sounds good to me. That's Melissa Carper, who is the first guest here on the Show on the Road podcast for 2023. Thank you for being back with us. And I just came back from a little trip to New Orleans. And it's amazing the people that you would see just busking on Royal Street. And Melissa used to be one of those folks, but now you can see her in your town, anywhere in the United States. I am going to be going to see her show here in L.A. on Friday. That is tomorrow, the 20th, in L.A. at the Hotel Cafe. And I think it's super important to support these artists that were street musicians and now are touring all around the world, trying to make their dream a little bigger, trying to make it real. And if you can, go buy a ticket to wherever she's going. She's creating something that is, I think, science fiction. It's harnessing the energy, the warmth of a saloon in 1948 and bringing it to you in the age of TikTok. Anyway, I'm so glad you're here. This is going to be a really fun season. And now, without further ado, Melissa Carper. This song, Making Memories, I don't know why it's been going around recently. I mean, it's been out for a few years now, right?
That was out a couple years ago, yeah.
It's like one of those little trading cards that, like, kids used to pass around, like Pokemon or, like, Magic the Gathering. I feel like great songs by, like, artists that people are just discovering late in the game are like, you know, this is something you're going to need.
Nice.
And, like, that song has just sort of been, like, threading its way into, like, my life for some reason through different people, through the radio. I don't know what it is. I put it actually on my radio show here in L.A.
Cool.
And it feels like you are singing to us from a point in the past that we want to bring back, or a point in the future that we're not quite there yet. Does that make any sense?
I'll have to think about that, but whatever it means, that sounds pretty cool. I like it.
like to keep.
When did you start writing songs? How young?
The first song I wrote, I was probably 19 or 20, something like that. It wasn't much of a song. I didn't really start writing what I would consider better songs until like my mid to later 20s.
Sometimes though, starting later, like there's a lot of history and relationships and all these things that have like stacked on top of each other, like sediment, you know, like
for sure.
So you have a lot of great like fossils to mine as a song archaeologist.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like that I didn't have much to write about yet, you know, when I was in my early 20s. So it took till I was in my later 20s where I felt like I had a little something to say.
And the new record is called Ramblin' Soul.
Yep.
Now, there are the glories of being on the road, which I think we all pined for in 2020 when we were shut inside for so long. Then there's also the gas station bathrooms, the late night drives to the Motel 6, the horrifyingly bad sandwiches at the gig. What do you think is your favorite thing about touring? And then your very least favorite thing?
Yes, this is a good question. The favorite thing about touring would have to be, you know, the actual shows themselves. When you're having an amazing show with a great audience that you've never been in front of before. Or, you know, like this last time I was out on the road, we had a really fun show in Asheville. And a lot of the people had been listening to my albums. They knew the words. They were singing along. So
that's awesome.
You know, when you have that connection with people out there, I think it's really special. And I mean, it's I think more exhausting than people realize. There's really not much fun to be had because you're besides the show itself, because you're getting up kind of early to get to the next town, and then you pretty much drive right up to the venue for your load in and sound check. And you know, if you do get a day off or a couple days off, you're just kind of like trying to recover. So yeah, it's a little bit rough out there for sure, but you know, it's definitely more glorious than the reality.
Well, I feel like I need the small excitements of like a random diner in like the middle of the desert sometimes. You know, like when you go to the same places in your neighborhood over and over again, you're like, how many times am I going to order this Vietnamese food? Like, I've done this like over and over again, especially as a new dad. My daughter might wake up soon in this interview, so FYI. As a new dad, you are forced into relentless repetition and routine, which is very hard for me. I think I like the idea that every day there's something a little weird and new that's happening out on the road. And when you're home, you're like, okay, I got to get up, make the bottle, change her diaper, give her breakfast, put her back down for a nap, get another bottle, have lunch, have another bottle, another diaper, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like, oh my God, like, is this the rest of my life now?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I have trouble with routine as well. I really like fresh new things all the time, changing things up. I'm excited. I'll be going to the West Coast in January and February for the first time. I've never toured out there. So that'll be super exciting to see new things and discover new amazing restaurants. And I have friends living out there that I haven't seen in a long time. So yeah, all that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I was actually almost going to wait to do this interview until you're at Hotel Cafe here in LA.
Yeah.
January 20th, that's happening?
I can't remember for sure. That sounds right. Yeah, because I'm in Yucca Valley the night before. Yeah.
Yes, I marked it in my calendar because I was like, yes, this is definitely happening. It's the one weekend I'm around. in January.
Oh, awesome. That's great.
Seeing artists at an intimate place like Hotel Cafe, it's like the best way to really feel the music. My band Dust Bowl Revival just played a show last night here in Venice Beach. And you know, we've played probably every venue in this town that isn't like the Hollywood Bowl in some capacity. You know, we've played the Wiltern for 4,000 people. We've played some speakeasy for 10 people, you know. And there's something about seeing people really close and like feeling their emotion as they're singing the songs with you. Like you said, that is what you live for as a musician, as a songwriter. And for me, again, the opposite of that, the most heartbreaking thing about going on the road sometimes is that people just don't know or care about the music. Sometimes they're like, who are you? I don't care.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I've definitely felt both. And that is hard when people aren't really listening and don't care. That's definitely a hard show.
Do you recall a show where people were particularly hostile to your music or your vibe?
Wow. Not that I can remember right now. Maybe I blocked it out of my memory.
Yeah. PTSD. But there's a song you wrote called I Do What I Wanna.
Yeah, I Do What I Wanna.
But wanna is in capital letters. Letting us know exactly how important that is.
Yeah, you know, I wrote that with my friend Gina Galena, and we were sending stuff back and forth to each other in emails, and she put on her email, I Do What I Wanna in all caps. So when I saw that, I knew I had to keep that.
The only time a great country song came from an email signature on Gmail, you know, it's the modern age.
Yes.
But I think that song speaks to, I think, an interesting maybe problem or a feature of being a traveling troubadour like yourself. Like, it's almost like you need the romance to have, you know, room to breathe. Like, you can't always be around the people you love. You have to have like space. You have to like be able to see other things, see other people, not necessarily sexually, but I'm saying like you got to be free to do what you want to do and also come back into the warm arms of the people you love. And that's sometimes hard to take for people in relationships with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with the I Do What I Wanna, I feel like, you know, I hope it doesn't come across as a selfish thing, because it really isn't. It's kind of just about following your heart instead of being, you know, overly influenced by what other people want you to be doing. I do feel like the Ramblin' Soul album has a vibe of just like, you know, freedom, individuality, enjoying life. You know, it's got sort of that vibe to it. And that I happened to be writing a few songs that had that feeling to them, so I wanted to put them on the same album. And as far as like, you know, the way the recordings are turning out, being warm and sounding like we're all just playing in the same room and feeling like it has that old-fashioned sound to it. That just kind of comes naturally, really, with my music. I listen to I've been influenced by a lot of old music, and that's what I love to listen to myself, so I feel like that's kind of what I end up writing. And then all the musicians that have been on my albums, I feel like they've really studied the old music and they know how to make it sound, you know, authentic. The you know, as well as the studio, I chose the Bomb Shelter in Nashville, and Andrea Tokic as the engineer. He's really wonderful at capturing that analog. He records to analog tape, and he's great at getting those warm tones and those great tones.
When you start to collect songs for a record, do you feel like there's an artist or a few artists that you always kind of reach back to that you want to honor or you want to call in reference to? I mean, obviously, I hear a lot of Patsy Cline on some of these tracks. I grew up listening to that with my mom. That was like her... one of her go-tos in that, you know, the dusty cassettes at the bottom of her Toyota Camry. A lot of, nice. A lot of Patsy, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the more, you know, slow, romantic, but also like sadder songs, I think, call to mind Patsy. You know, it's funny how there would be 4, 5, 6, 7 songs in a row on those records she made that are just like, you broke my heart. I'm never going to get over it. I can't believe this is happening. It's like every song is just like the world is ended. I have nothing left. And yet you're like, but you feel somehow like rejuvenated by her anguish because you're like, yeah, I also feel that sometimes.
Yeah. You know, once again, I don't know how much is really intentional, but I did listen to a ton of Patsy Cline growing up. My parents were huge Patsy Cline fans, and we listened to a lot of Hank Williams as well, and which is a sort of same thing. There's lots of sad love songs that you're and for some reason as a kid I loved the sad love songs. I loved them so much, and I had actually fallen as deeply in love as you can with my friend when I was in third grade. And I think it was after that I was really appreciating those sad love songs.
Yeah.
She was one of my best friends. She was my best friend. And like I realized at that age, I was like, oh, I'll never be able to be with this person. And, you know, this is never going to happen. So I think, you know, in a lot of ways at that point and from then on, I was just obsessed with the sad love songs. And I do tend to write a lot of those myself.
That's my only regret, that I was mean when we parted, and I never said sorry. That's my only regret.
There's also something of a wink in some of these, like my only regret, right? It's like, it's called My Only Regret. But like the thing is like a laundry list of regrets, you know. I became a jealous wreck. I just couldn't forget, you know. I never said sorry. I was mean when we parted. You know, it's like all these things that went down as the relationship crumbled before you. You're like, no, that's my only regret.
Yeah, that was the whole that was the whole premise of the song. I was like, I'm going to say that's my only regret, but then I'm going to list 20 regrets. But yeah, I like to throw in just like a little, I don't know, something that's, I don't know if you'd call that humor, or it's just somehow it makes everything even just a little more sad. If you're able to look at it with a bit of a sense of humor.
Well, I think John Prine did that best for me. Like, you know,
yes, Prine, he's the master.
Sort of stick you in the gut with a knife as you were kind of laughing at some of the lines, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
because I think we want to be able to sort of laugh through our tears. Otherwise, we'll just jump off a bridge. Like, what?
Exactly.
Like, what else can we do?
Yeah, you got to be able to do that. Yeah. I thought surely you would leave. That's my only regret. That I couldn't receive love yet. And I never believed it could last. That's my only regret.
Like, when you're in love with someone in third grade, because I'm sure we all were in some ways, you know, like, I remember there was like a girl that just totally rocked my world from like first, second grade through high school. Like what?
Nice.
What was my plan with this girl? Like, if she actually was like, yes, let's be together forever. Like, what would you do? Like, hold hands and walk through the park? I don't even like. It's like the idea of romance is like instilled in us as such small little creatures. Without any real knowledge of what that entails.
Yeah, I think, you know, I know I wanted to hold her hand and just, you know, be close to her, spend a lot of time with her. But yeah, that really what nothing went past that, you know. No notions past that.
Where did you grow up?
North Platte, Nebraska.
So that's probably not a very large town.
25,000 back then, and I imagine it's about the same, maybe a little bigger.
What did your folks do?
My dad worked for the National Weather Service. There was a weather station there in North Platte, and my mom was a bookkeeper and for an orthopedic surgeon.
But your family also was involved in music, right? You kind of had like a family band growing up?
That's right, yeah. We had a family country band. Two of my brothers and my mom and myself were in the band. And we started playing like clubs like the American Legion and the Elks and Eagles. And we started playing those places when I was about 12. And then through high school, I remember playing gigs pretty much every Friday, Saturday night.
Are you a bass player?
Yes, that's my main instrument. I play upright. So I went to study upright bass at Lincoln, Nebraska. I majored in music performance and I went for about 2.5 years and dropped out. But yeah, I started upright bass actually in elementary school. We had a string program in North Platte, Nebraska, believe it or not.
How about that?
And I got to start on a half-size bass in fourth grade. For whatever reason, I really wanted to play the biggest instrument that I could.
But you've been in several bands through the years, Buffalo Gals, Sad Daddy, Carper Family. Do you feel like you had to set out on your own, put your solo act out there to really sort of tell the stories you wanted to tell? Or was it just like a natural progression?
Honestly, I had no expectations with it at all. It was just sort of a dream to record what I felt like were some of my best songs I'd written, which is what Daddy's Country Gold is. It's like it's like a compilation of what I felt like were some of my really good songs. And it was kind of a dream just to put those all on an album and get some great players behind it and make it at a nice studio. I had no plan with it. I wasn't like, okay, I'm going to record this album and then I'm going to start my solo career. That wasn't a thought I was having. So when the album turned out so good and I decided I should pay for some promotion, I'd never done that before. So I paid for radio and also PR. And then it got out into the world. And I guess seeing the reactions, getting the response I got from Daddy's Country Gold is what made me feel like, oh, I should keep doing this. I should, you know, make another album of my songs. So.
Flushing pots and cyber spots and no space to get away from the wreckage. She knows a place way in old Appalachia where the chicory blooms to chickadee's tune. Russian gal is a real kind of pal. She don't care if I'm poor. Once my love doesn't need no more than to have me around when the sun's going down. I do what I shall for my old-fashioned gal.
Well, I think a lot of folks, you know, in their 20s, 30s, haven't heard the music of like Patsy Cline and Hank Williams in a long time, or they hear it like used ironically in a video game with echo on it or something. You know, it's like stuff that it feels like these gems from a lost past. And I think hearing a song like It's Better If You Never Know on Daddy's Country Gold, it's like Patsy's ghost in the room with us, you know, that piano and the heartache of, you know, trying to determine should this person know what I've done, you know, is it better for them to like be in the dark and we can go on loving each other, you know, those types of stories that Patsy would tell so well. That's what country music for me is in its platonic ideal, you know.
I think that a lot of that writing that goes into that mainstream country commercial type music is not coming from the heart at all.
It's better if you never know. Feelings that have begun to grow. Just hurry back home and we'll pretend there's nothing wrong. It's better if you never know.
It changes your mind around, I think, when you've been cheated on. Like, should maybe I not have known? Like, would that have made me happier? You know?
Right.
And then, like, in theory, if you were to cheat on someone, you're like, now I have to, like, turn it on myself. Should this person not know to spare them the pain, you know? Or is it like their right to know? Like, relationships are these like contracts. They're like, do we break the contract?
I feel with that song too, I'm keeping it really vague, you know, what it is that's happened. And I don't think it's even necessarily that you've cheated on somebody. It could even be that you've entertained the notions, you know, just as little as that, but, or that you just feel like it's better if they don't know what you're feeling, you know, what you've been feeling.
When you start to write a song like that, do you feel like you're thinking about a certain person from your past, thinking about a pain point that is always kind of like a fresh wound that you can draw from, or are you sort of imagining something that could happen?
Yeah, I feel like nowadays I'm able to draw from a lot of different past experiences, or even imagine, you know, something I haven't experienced. But nowadays too, like say, take for instance that song, It's Better If You Never Know. The idea for the song itself just came from a conversation I was having with some people, and then somebody said that phrase, "It's better if you never know," and and especially if you're living in Nashville and you're around a bunch of songwriters, everybody all the time is always thinking, that could be a song, that could be a song. That's literally what happened. Somebody said that phrase and somebody else was like, well, that could be a song. And then I started writing the song the next day.
There's nothing wrong. It's better if you never know.
Are you writing on other instruments, or are you actually writing with your upright bass?
I usually write with no instrument. I'll just write in my head, and then I'll make up the, usually the melodies sort of fall around. Once I have a lyric, a melody will fall around that lyric pretty easily, and then I'll just keep singing it, you know, in my head and out loud until the song pretty much forms, and then I'll pretty much, I almost always have a complete song before I'll go back and grab my guitar and find what the chords are. I've been really surprised. A lot of times I'll be really surprised when I sit down to find the chords to my song, what the chords are. And an example of that is Old Fashioned Gal on Daddy's Country Gold. The chords in the chorus are really kind of crazy where they change. It's really, you know, you might not notice when you're listening to it, but if somebody tries to learn that song, it's really strange where the chords change. And it was the melody that dictated that, which is kind of cool.
When you tour, do you have like a 4-piece band, 5-piece band? Like, what's the instrumentation?
Right now, when I'm touring, I'll tour usually with just a duo or a trio.
Okay.
And that's kind of what the gigs can afford that I'm getting at the moment. If it's a bigger festival and I can throw on another person or something, or if it's in Texas, if it's a local gig, then I can put together a bigger band because I'm not paying for travel expenses and stuff. But the duo right now would usually be me on bass and then a guitar player. And then if I can have a trio, I'll have Rebecca on fiddle as well. And that's Rebecca Paddock of the Buffalo Gals, and she's my partner as well.
You know, it's important to keep your friends close and your enemies closer. No, but like, you know, it's funny how in Nashville, especially, a lot of friends of mine, it's like they end up marrying their bass player. They marry their drummer and marry their singing partner. I always wonder, like, if you guys get into an argument before you get on stage, like, what happens? It'd be like, no, actually, we have to just, like, pretend nothing happened.
Yeah, that's, you know, that doesn't really happen very often, luckily. I can't remember it really happening. But I think just the hardest part really would be if you're always spending time together, like, you're together at home and then you're together out on the road. And you don't get that time apart that you need. But these days, I'd say that doesn't happen to us. We both get our time apart. A lot of times I'm going out now without Rebecca, and she also has a lot more jobs. She's not always available to go out on the road. But yeah, we've done that before where we've just like spend our entire life around each other. And that's the most challenging thing.
Do you have goats on your farm?
No, and it's not my farm. We're renting a tiny house on a friend's farm, and it's an organic veggie farm. In the past they've had animals, but right now it's primarily organic veggie.
So this is the place you lived when you made Ramblin' Soul?
Yeah, still living out there. We moved here in the fall of 2020, and I made Ramblin' Soul in January. We recorded it January of this year.
Do you actually harvest the vegetables yourself? Are you out there day by day?
We did. Yeah. So when we first moved here, we did work trade for rent, and we worked 4 days out of the week. Like the mornings we worked 4 hours, and we would, you know, we'd do everything involved with the veggies. We would, you know, plant them and harvest them and weed and all that stuff. But we haven't done that work for a while. We've just gotten too busy with music. So I miss that work, though. It's really grounding. It's really nice to be out in nature.
There's definitely a song on that new record that, you know, is pretty emotional, that Ain't a Day Goes By track. And I know, you know, a couple years back you lost some of your family right in a row, mom and your dad, and then your brother had his mental illness challenges, and then your dog, you know. It was just like a cascade of loss, and it took several years to process that, right?
Yeah, actually, you know, it's been a while now since I've lost my parents, I wrote Ain't a Day Goes By right after my dog Betty died. And that song is I think from 2014. And I really had a hard time singing it without crying, so I would rarely put it, you know. I taught it to one band, Sad Daddy. We played it a few times. But yeah, it was one of those songs that it was just always really hard to sing. But I felt like with the Ramblin' Soul album, I felt like it was ready for its life. Yeah. When I first wrote it and would sing it to myself, I would just be, you know, completely bawling in tears, just even through the first chorus and verse. So, yeah. I mean, I think it was like one of those songs that was therapy for me.
Yeah, it's amazing how attached we get to these little pups. I mean, we have
adopted. they're like your children. Here's Georgia Peach. She's right here with me.
Oh, Georgia. Yeah, we have this rescued pit bull mix that we got during last year, and at the time, you know, we didn't also have a baby, you know, and then the baby sort of came along, and Sonny's like, wait, but I thought I was the baby, you know.
Oh yeah.
And so now they kind of have these like kind of competing interests at times, but they also like are obsessed with each other, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Because they JJ's dropping her cheese and she's like, I know the dog loves this cheese, and the dog's like, this is great for me, keep going.
Yeah. Nice.
But at the same point, like you could tell that like she's bummed that the attention is not given to her as much, you know.
Primarily, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I've wondered what that might feel like, because I've only had dogs, but Rebecca might want to have a child someday, so I've wondered how upset, you know, the dog's gonna get.
I remember hearing about this, I think it was like a New Yorker article that at first I laughed at, and then I realized that I was probably one of these people, that like men who have dogs before the child arrives, like end up going to therapy because they're like, I think I love the dog more than the child at first, because I don't like know the child yet. Like this dog has been with me through some really hard times, and like this little baby, like this baby doesn't know me.
I'd be one of those men that needed that.
And then you have this like existential guilt, like shouldn't I like feel the same emotion for this creature that is part of my DNA? But then the baby starts like actually talking and saying, you know, dad, when you walk in, you're like, ah, game over. All right.
Yeah. I imagine it doesn't take long.
The 1980 Dodge van was my very first car. I drove around just everywhere. Had 300,000 hard miles on that motor. Been hauling my family around.
There's times where, you know, you're out there late at night, especially on some dark road, you know, and, you know, we've had some dicey drives in Colorado and the snow, you know. Has there been a particularly harrowing drive that you remember?
You know, I know some of my friends that are out there touring a lot. I've had some pretty major car accidents that could have easily and should have killed somebody in the car. Like, yeah, it could happen at any time. I'm always praying for protection. I believe, you know, in angels and all that.
Which angel is your go-to for protection?
I mean, I just know I have my personal angels. I don't know what their names are. but
okay.
I've probably been saved already millions of times, especially when my dad was driving and falling asleep while he was driving. He tells this story. My dad would tell the story that I was just a little kid and I was in the back of the car sleeping, and it was late at night, and he fell asleep at the wheel. I think everybody in the car was sleeping, including my dad. And then he like slams on the brakes and then he tells everybody, the hand of God came down and stopped the car.
Yeah.
Because he was like, I don't remember stopping the car even. He's just like, the hand of God came down. I don't know.
All right, last question. Go into your fantasy headspace. You're going to be putting together the Melissa Carper curated festival. It can be anywhere in the world. You get the site free of charge. And you get to book the first five headliners, dead or alive. Who are they?
Oh my gosh, you had to say dead or alive. I mean, I'm going to have to pick all dead people here.
Great.
All right. Hank Williams, Jimmy Rogers, Lead Belly, Bessie Smith, Billie Holiday.
Nobody who is around after 1958. All right, that's the one stage. Now you have to book the five headliners who are currently living.
Okay, thank you for that chance. Okay, currently living, Sierra Farrell, Coulter Wall, Brennan Lee. You know, I don't know much about the music that's currently happening.
Those are people who are currently happening.
I know. Let's see who else. I'll put Nora Jones on one of the stages. Let's see here. I got one more. I'm gonna put my band Sad Daddy on one of the stages.
Right. I was hoping you're gonna say Beyonce, but it's fine.
I don't want to let them down.
Sad Daddy or Beyonce. I mean, it's like, right. You know,
it was a hard choice, but.
Or Sad Daddy featuring Beyonce, you know. I'm really happy that people are starting to collect your music like the finely polished gem stones that they are.
Ah, thank you so much.
All right, keep up the good work. Talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right,
see you soon. Bye bye.
I was much too short. You were much too tall, and we were never right for each other after all. From what I recall, from what I recall, we were never right for each other. Your mama never liked me, and I never liked your pa, and we were never right for each other after all.
There she goes, Melissa Carper, everybody.
I have been wearing out these last two records she made. Ramblin' Soul is the newest one, and previous to that, Daddy's Country Soul. She's going to be touring the West Coast as we speak for the first time, so please go out and support her. She'll be playing in Yucca Valley, out in Joshua Tree. That's tonight at Aw Bar, and then tomorrow at Hotel Cafe in Hollywood. She'll be playing in San Francisco, and then in Mariposa, Nevada City, Reno, Ashland, Oregon, Bend, Portland, Seattle, and more. MelissaCarper.com. If you love this podcast, well, me too. I'm so glad you're here. Leave us a kind review on the podcast page, and do me a huge favor and just share it with one of your buds. Just say, hey, I found a lot of cool new bands, new songwriters on here, and I think you're going to dig this too. I discovered some really cool new cumbia music listening to the Alt Latino podcast from NPR. Really, really cool stuff. I'm doing a concerted effort this year of listening to music not sung in English, because, you know, the whole world doesn't sing in English, and the whole world has got some pretty great music to share. If there are Spanish language artists especially that I should be listening to right now that you would like me to interview, please send an email to theshowontheroadpod@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram, showontheroadpodcast. If you're curious what my band Dust Bowl Revival is up to, well, next week we are coming out of our hibernation to play in New England. Yes, sunny, tropical New England in January, the 24th of January at Boston City Winery. We're going to be going up to Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island. Really cool stuff, so please check it out, dustbowlrevival.com. As always, the show on the road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Zach Lupitan, and we are part of the BGS Podcast Network. Stay safe, tell your friends about all the good music that you hear wherever you hear it, and we'll see you every other Thursday out on the trail. After all,
all this time has passed, why does my love for you last after all? Yes, after all. After all. After all.
Hey you, do you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.